All righty, Joel Radio is back. Hi, Joel Fragmenti, Corey Hall.
Mazel tov.
Corey Hall's back. He was off for a week.
L'chaim.
And now he's back. So thank you, Corey,
Shabbat shalom,
for joining us today.
Guten Tag to my German
friend.
The
seat is still warm from Bill Hildebrand, I'm sure.
Is it?
Maybe, I don't know.
It's got a smell.
It might. Joel Radio's back. Welcome in. We got a lot to get to today. Because we didn't do TV and movies with Hildebrand.
Well, I don't have a team.
You know,
the last good show on TV
was
Chico and the Man.
I opened for Freddie Prinze in 1978.
You know, Gary Shandling wrote a joke. I sold a joke to Gary Shandling that was on the Chico and the Man.
Did you really?
As about Puerto Ricans soaping up the window. And our Howard Johnson's.
All right, well, that's...
I don't know what
happened. All right, Corey Hall, if you came out and saw Bill...
The Rifleman with Chuck Connors, that was a good show.
Bill... So Bill brought out his... he was talking about it last week. He brought out his bus full of drunkos from all of his neighborhood haunts. He literally got, like, a tour bus that you would go to, like... It would be like the senior bus to the Soaring Eagle Casino kind of bus. Uh-huh. And he rented this thing. He said it was
rented the short bus?
Like a thousand. No, it was a giant fucking bus.
It was a full size bus.
It was $1,000. It was a giant fucking bus. He spent $1,000. It was okay. So
wait,
he shows up.
So he spent like more than his paycheck?
I don't know what he's getting paid. I don't know the finances. So he brings up. So he fills it up with people from the Hideout, the Royal Inn, and Duffy's Pub in Auburn Hills. So, like, three, you know, dark old man bars he filled up with drunks to bring to the show. So they're there for the first show on Saturday, and they are causing trouble from the minute they walk in. They're drinking on the bus. They're bringing in cups, you know, just the whole fucking mess.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm working the door at Comedy Castle. It's my regular gig. And I'm working the door, and, you know, it's kind of rowdy, and, like, my girlfriend brought her mother and some friends to see the show because she had listened to Bill on the show and found out he was my mentor, wanted to see what Bill was all about. And she's just, like, my girlfriend's, like, waving us over, like, yeah, a guy over there is vaping.
And now you're single.
And it's like, well, no, but it's just, like, that's how bad they were that my girlfriend was, like, offended that these hillbillies were drinking at the Comedy Castle.
Wow.
So I have to introduce Bill, you know, the offstage. So I'm in the green room with Hildebrand. And, you know, it just says, you know, clubs and colleges, whatever, Vegas headliner. And I said, we got a great show tonight with your headliner. You might know him from the Royal Inn, Duffy's Pub, or the Hideout. It's Bill Hildebrand. And they roared.
Yeah.
Which, at this point, is probably where you know Bill.
Right.
More than a... So...
He's...
I gave him a big pop at the beginning, but I probably encouraged the drunks.
He's in the top of the bar stool list.
He is. So
Bill took me to some old man bar one time that I didn't know was there.
Oh, yeah?
In Royal Oak. Like, North Royal Oak. Like,
that's probably the Royal Inn on Rochester Road.
Way out of
12
downtown.
And Rochester,
yeah.
John Tenney's hung out there, too. Because when Tenney moved, he goes, I got my new spot.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's the Royal Inn. I don't think Tenney's stuck there, which is...
Well, John likes to be a little incognito sometimes. John is split between having his adoring pub...
Yes.
Gus Lane Alley is his regular...
You know...
John lives in somewhere in Royal Oak, and he likes to split his time between downtown
but
Royal Oak.
But he... John... So Gus Lane Alley, I don't want to get into this, but that place is changing. There's a big article in the Free Press, largely about Gus Lane Alley, which is funny.
Yes.
But then Tenney's Diner burned down.
Yes.
Yes.
We hung out there a lot.
Yeah, and I used to take my girlfriend there because I told her they had good chicken soup.
No, we call that place Soup Club.
Yeah. T&J's Coney
Coles.
Island? Coles. A Coles place. That's
Coles
right.
Coles place.
Coles place.
C-O-L.
Yeah.
That was John. John and a couple other friends of mine, we dads are like, we used to hang out years ago at the Lantern in Royal Oak, which is
as
now,
I did, yeah.
Which is now a gigantic, overpriced yuppie condo building. It's it's this megalith
yes
bar. It's got, you know, ground floor retail and overpriced hotel.
Well, that's
living.
The Hamlin Corner now, isn't that that built? Well, I mean, so
that's how Royal Exchange. That's how Royal Exchange. Yeah. It was a 24-hour family-owned little diner,
a Greasy Spoon,
with that had the famous Russian hillbilly sandwich. That was their classic.
Okay.
And anyway, and Kid Rock before he was famous would hang out in there.
Yes,
it's all gone. But John is the greatest guy in the world to drink coffee with at 2 a.m.
Yeah,
like that's really most of my memories of John are, and that diner was our spot we would hang out.
Yeah,
at,
John.
In the,
John took
in
me to Cole's
times.
Originally, and then I started going there on my own. But that place. I got a report. My girlfriend was driving down 75, and she
I don't know how bad
goes,
the fire was.
She goes, "Cole's is on fire," and I go, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun. But anyway,
well, have you seen about these California fires?
Yeah, that's crazy.
A friend of mine lives in Idlewild,
okay,
which is up in the mountains,
NorCal.
Yeah, and it's
middle sort of.
Yeah, it's upper the valley. It's like about 2 hours
right.
from LA. Anyway,
the high desert.
Yeah, Inland Empire, whatever.
I'm not even sure that that's right.
You know, and all those Bakersfield and all that stuff. Anyway, Idlewild's up in the mountains. It's a beautiful little mountain town. And some dude went around and shot flares out of his truck.
Ooh.
Just drove around and shot
flares.
Probably
shouldn't do that.
And the mountainside caught fire.
Ugh.
And there's like 3 ways off that mountain, and 2 of them were blocked off.
Yeah.
And it was like, it got real scary up there. So,
When you just look at those, you know, I was in LA last summer in July, and it literally looks like you could take a Bic lighter and like set the Hollywood Hills on fire.
Oh, you could.
But it's just the yellow as can be, driest place.
First time I ever went to LA, we drove in from Vegas and there was a fire. So we rerouted through the backwoods for like 4 hours. And we get to LA, and the fucking whole valley's on fire.
Ugh.
And we're just driving in, and it looks like Lord of the Rings. It looks like Mount Doom. Like we're driving toward. It was LA's crazy with the fires.
All right, well, let's get into some stuff. Do you want to stay on the comedy tip and tell us about the Metro late night taping? Because we plugged that for a couple weeks.
We did.
I had to go out of town for the gathering, which we'll get to.
We
but,
had Tom McCarthy in here.
Yeah, and
Bill
was on the phone. And
so these guys were behind. I think Tom's one of the producers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when we'll see this finished product. It's now in editing phase.
It's in editing, yes.
I thought it was a great show. We had like 20 comics.
Okay.
19 of them did great. And
well, I mean, you can't be expected to deliver every night, Corey.
That's right.
All right. Hey now.
Well, it was tough though because I went on after
50 beautiful girls and 3 ugly ones.
Yeah, I went on right after Robert Jenkins and he had a good set,
yeah,
so I had to kind of like and Melanie Hearn I think were right before
all
me.
All right.
So they did all my material about being a black woman in America. No, I was there were good comics on the whole bill. Obviously, friends of the show.
Yeah.
Jeff Horst was on
and
all kinds of good. I think we had Jeff on to plug the show.
We did. Well, he plugged. I don't know what he did.
He was plugging.
He got hit in the head with a dildo. That's why he was on.
Oh,
the show.
He was plugging his Comedy Central special.
Yeah, that's coming up. So we'll have him on before
we'll
that.
Do that. Anyway, it was a great lineup, a good vibe. Everybody. Got a, you know what I mean? Like, if you gather 15 comics on a show, sometimes there's going to be 3 or 4 that don't like it, 2 or 3, whatever.
Yeah.
Everybody got along. It was a great
lineup.
The show went well. Only really, almost all the sets were great.
How was Jason Carr as host?
Jason was there for like the first half and split, but.
Oh, okay.
Well, he's got to get up at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Because he does like, Jason does. The show before the Today Show.
Yes.
So he's on like.
But doesn't he? Did his show after the Today Show?
Yeah,
after Megyn Kelly.
He's on at like 6 a.m.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on morning television because you know I could
know.
Talk about morning television.
Because, yeah, Jason does 2 shows. He's done like. He does like the morning news.
Yeah.
He anchors that at like 6 a.m. Then he does the more loosey goosey, like studio. Live in the D show at 10 o'clock. So he's got a busy schedule, but he was cool, came out and hung out. Jason loves comedy.
Yeah, he does.
Loves comics. And we had a good time. He did his Bill Bonds impression. Because I was goofing on him with the names of, you know, old time Detroit.
Yeah.
I was like, Dwayne X. Riley wasn't available. We had to get you.
Al Ackerman has passed away.
Exactly.
So.
It was like, you know, where's Bob Ryan and Tom Ryan? Sorry, where's Tom Ryan and. Anyways, busting a shot. John Kelly.
Speaking of comedy, tell us about this article, because I know we can relate to this thing.
Oh, God. There's an article in New York Magazine this week.
New York Magazine.
And this one, it might be... anyway. I think this is...
is that a weekly? No, bi-weekly New York Magazine?
I think New York Magazine might be bi-weekly.
I don't know, yeah.
I get it. It comes all the time, so I think it comes every month or 2 weeks. Anyway.
Well.
So... an article called The One I'd Take Back.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of controversy going. There's an endless stream of controversy about what's appropriate to say in comedy. I don't know if you saw, there was a video, Ben Gelb.
No.
Who our friend Chris Newberg works with.
Yeah.
On Idiot Test. He, like, people were yelling at him for Trump jokes and, you know, threatening him and stuff. So, I mean, it's getting weird.
Oh, yeah.
I remember about a year, even before the election, I think in 2016, I was up at the Comedy Castle on a weekend, and I just had a joke where I just said Obama as like a setup for something else. Mm-hmm. Wasn't even really a joke about, I, you know what I mean? It was just like, you know, something about Obama, and then it was a setup to something else. And a woman just, at the name Obama, goes, like, just hissed. Like, in a way, that, like, you wouldn't, you know what I mean? Normally, you could be like,
right.
Before that, you could be like, hey, Bush is an idiot. And it would generally,
yeah.
You couldn't do 45 minutes on Bush is an idiot, because right. People would push back. But you could do one or two jokes. Anyway, it's getting hot.
Yeah.
This is called The One I'd Take Back.
All right.
And this is comedians on the jokes they most regret.
Okay.
All right. So you've got Patton Oswalt. When you're young and insecure, you're not comfortable enough in making fun of yourself yet. You're terrified of being on stage, and the stuff I regret is what I was doing easy and lazy jokes about midgets or someone who's mentally handicapped just to get a rise out of the audience. And his joke was, are there gay retarded people? Where's their march? They should be allowed to have a march. It's not really a joke. I'm sure he had more of a bit.
I'm sure that sounds like a setup for more of a bit.
And he regrets, he just said that the word retard got an easy laugh.
All right.
So I can understand where he would...
Fair enough.
Now, that used to be, retard was a word that was used over and over again. Sorry.
Yes.
My mic.
Yes, it's fine.
It was making noise. Anyway, that was a word you'd hear every night on a comedy stage. That people are a little more judicious. I really emphasize the Jew in judicious, but... people are a little more comfortable about that.
Any other good? Because I'm going to give you one of mine, and I know you got one too. But any other examples?
There's one that drove me nuts, though. Sasheer Zamata, who was on SNL, who you might remember her as a black girl that was the waitress in the sketches. Like she was on SNL for about 3 years and made literally zero impact.
Yeah.
She's a stand-up. I don't think I've really seen her stand-up much.
Yeah.
She was just on To Tell the Truth this week. Her joke is she used to sleep with white men, and I'd strut across the stage in a braggadocious manner, and I'd say, so many white men have moved in and out of my pussy, you could call it Williamsburg.
No, that's a funny joke.
So many white men been meeting out of this pussy, you could call it Hale and Hardy. That's some restaurant.
Yeah, I've never heard of that restaurant.
So many white men been beating up this pussy, you could call it Rodney King. All right, fine.
It's a joke, yes.
And she was like, I shouldn't have brought Rodney King in it. But I'm like, that's clearly
that's
a joke.
Fine.
It's a punchline.
I have no problem with that. I'm not offended by anything, but I don't even get why you would be offended by that. And I'm not saying she's... It's all about what you're comfortable with saying, and if, as a comic, you're not comfortable bringing up Rodney King to get... I mean, but what people might say is, like, don't exploit a real situation for a cheap laugh.
Well, Paul Scheer said he did some sketch bit where he was a stand-up comic that got trapped in the rubble of 9/11. And then he shows up, and he's doing his jokes, but it's like debris is falling off him. Dust. And I'm like, it's a little bad taste, but I at least get that that's a premise. Here's the one that made me nuts.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I'm not a fan of said person, but Cameron Esposito.
Cameron Esposito.
Are you familiar with
her? Oh, she's my favorite comic. I think I've seen her live, actually, believe it or not, yes.
Okay. This is madness to me. This makes me fucking nuts.
Okay.
I'm foaming at the mouth.
You are? What? I didn't even want to say it, but Corey is
I used to talk about
frothing.
This is Cameron Esposito. I used to talk about women getting periods. I had this bit I did about how our body smashes our bodies out of our bodies.
Okay. It's
a hilarious bit.
Yeah.
I did it on
TV. What happens.
I also have a lot of trans and non-binary humans in my life and in my audience. And they told me I might want to make it more inclusive.
How?
Now I use phrases like people with vaginas are cultured female and sometimes men and women. But I explain that I know those are reductive binary terms.
Mm.
Get the fuck out of my fucking
that's not
life,
stand-up.
You stupid cow.
Well, it's not.
A bunch of crap. Okay.
It's not.
Joel. I'm going to make a joke about how Hervey Villaches can't dunk.
Yes.
But that would be that would not be inclusive to people of average height.
I'd say how high is the rim?
What the fuck is the point of a joke? I'm sorry. Does anybody else have a period other than women? There are two genders by birth.
Right.
And then you're going to tell me that there's 78 genders
that just
by
seems. I mean, look,
decisions.
Cameron Esposito is a lesbian. I'm sure her audience is filled with gays, lesbians, trans, whatever. And I think to that audience, that audience is not known for laughing at things that aren't politically correct. So, I mean, in a sense, you've made an audience for yourself of people that may not normally go to comedy because they're worried about being offended by a big fat white guy like you.
There are plenty of conservative. Look, if you go too far on the political spectrum, really. There's no safe way to do it.
No.
Because this is, to me, an example of extreme, ridiculous leftist notions. And then Dennis Miller has, like, shut off the bulk of his audience by going to the right.
Yeah.
So, or you go and you know, Owen Benjamin has now turned into, like, an alt-right act. He used to be a piano comic, and now he's like, why can't I say the N-word?
Yeah.
So this fucking, okay, maybe it's her audience.
It might be.
Maybe it is specifically the people. Hal Sparks, a bunch of lesbians came to watch him, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yes.
But he was on Queer as Folk.
Yeah.
Hal is straight.
Yes. But I've played seen Hal. I've hung out with him.
Yeah, I worked with Hal. And I'm just saying, I worked with him in we had a big lesbian turnout in the crowd.
I watched a local news person, a man hit on Hal.
Oh. Which is, Hal's straight. But he played a gay character.
I watched what I assumed was a gay guy hitting on Hal.
Right. But anyway, but you play a gay character and suddenly you're now in the LGBT world. Mm-hmm. Whatever. People attract their fans. Lisa Lampanelli used to have a lot of gay fans.
Well, we played that clip a couple weeks ago.
Right. We covered her. But her audience, her and Kathy Griffin, like, appealed to.
Yeah, sure,
They literally just, and I'm sure Cameron.
Mario Cantone.
But this fucking non-binary, like.
Yeah, I know.
That's going beyond I want to offend people.
Yeah.
When you're like the physical reality of people born with the correct chromosome ratio to be a woman.
Yes.
Menstruate. Like, that's a fucking physical reality.
Yeah.
That everyone who doesn't menstruate should understand that.
Yeah, but when you talk about binary,
I don't bleed out of my uterus, but I consider myself a woman. So your joke insults me, or you could just go, no, I don't actually have a period.
It's also people on that side of things don't want to typify people and say, well, you're this or that, but they're fine with white guys are all the same.
Uh huh.
You know, white guys are all the same. Old white guys are all the same, but if you're gay and young, then everybody's different. It's a rainbow. You know, 30% of the world is fat old white guys who are wealthy. And it's like, that's not the case. White people are all different. I'm going to say that here. I'm putting my foot down on this one, Corey. I'm planting a flag saying not all white people are the same.
Well, the liberalism that I used to remember that I grew up with, the PBS, you know, Reading Rainbow, whatever, Free to Be You and Me kind of 70s style liberalism was people are different, but that's okay.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Black is beautiful.
Right, yeah.
Love the body you're in. Mm-hmm. Now it's like there can be no difference between any human being.
Yes.
They are all like community.
Right.
It was the.
The
mascot of community was a blank.
But then when you go, this is for black people or this is for gay people, you can have all of that as long as it's the minority. I know it sounds like I'm.
Well, I'm just saying that the progressive thing went from going like, hey, let's all just create a world where we have equality.
Yeah.
To I'm going to cater specifically only to Latinas with one leg who were born on the moon. It's like, you know what I mean?
There's a Netflix special for that.
Right. But it's just like this, like, my show is about the experience of hermaphrodite, 7'2" vegans from Slovenia.
Yeah.
If you're not that, you don't get to comment on my special or have an opinion about it.
Yeah.
And it does this weird segregationist fucking thing inside leftist politics, which is fucking aggravating.
Well, making comedy political, it's funny, even though...
And I hate... Okay. I hate Cameron Esposito.
All right.
I fucking hate her.
All right, good for you.
She's not funny.
Let's try to keep this show funny.
Speaking of not funny, did you ever get around to Nanette?
I didn't, and I'm still not gonna, but here's the thing. I think that politics and comedy, I think politics is fodder for comedians, but I don't think that the person doing that, people can't separate the person from the bit at this point. There is no...
You have to personify the identity that you are. As the objective observer,
right,
or the... hey, man, I'm wise to what's going on.
A commentator on somebody who observes and comments.
That is being replaced by, I am the representative of this ideal.
Yes, yes.
I am the either the alt-right white guy that's angry, or I am the Tasmanian lesbian that wants everyone to appreciate individual humanity and recognize their humanity, except white men are all rapists.
Yeah.
Other than that, so it's... I'm sorry. I just...
Look, I'm the white guy on a black radio show, and that is... I am often asked to answer for the sins of the white man.
Right.
And I go, I don't fucking know anything about those people.
Well,
that's not me.
I went on that show.
Yeah.
I went on that show and had a contrary opinion to we should free Kwame Kilpatrick from jail.
That's the disgraced Detroit mayor who was convicted of a bunch of federal crimes.
Who ran the city as a personal embezzlement ring. And fired people and whistleblower situations who called
him. I want to talk about our own bits.
I got called, but the guy called me a Jew on that radio show.
He did, yes.
As an insult.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, thanks, but, try again. Like, I'm like, I'm not actually a Jew.
I was driving around in my car listening to you on there. It was funny.
But it was the weirdest thing because, that would be the last thing that would insult me, by the way.
Yes, right, yeah.
Like, people think I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
I have a big nose.
Okay.
I talk with my hands. I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood. I've dated a lot of Jewish girls.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the least insulting thing you could call. You know what I mean? Like, and people are nuts. I'm just saying. That was all. You know what I read this whole bit was because I hate Cameron Esposito and I wanted to point out how fucking unfunny she is.
What bit did... Okay, I'll tell you the bit that I dropped in sort of the same way. Yeah. And it's probably closer to the Patton Oswalt thing. I used to... You know, I do jokes about girls I've dated. And I talk about, I used to date a girl in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And I got really upset when she wanted to break up with me. And I yelled at her. I said, "How do you think you can just roll out of my life like this?" And that's a first-year comedy joke, but there's wit in there. People laughed at that.
There's an old Bob Saget joke, which is, I met a midget.
Yeah,
I started dating her.
Yeah,
I'm nuts over her.
Yeah, okay.
See, there you go.
I did this joke, and every 15th, 20th show I would do, there'd be somebody in a wheelchair there. And I would, and not that that person in the wheelchair was offended or got angry. No one ever got angry. But I always felt like when somebody in a wheelchair would be at the show and I would do that joke, it wouldn't do as well because the rest of the audience was trying to be empathetic to the person in the wheelchair and going, we can't laugh at that because we're going to look like assholes.
Well, that's exactly
rather than letting me be the asshole for telling the joke. And so I just decided, well, I can drop this joke when I look out and I see a guy in a wheelchair there. Or I should just drop this joke in general because it's a dumb joke. So I dropped it, I didn't miss it. But, people did like that joke.
Well, okay, I have a bit about hover rounds.
Okay.
Like people in hover rounds at Walmart. And I haven't had this happen, but eventually somebody in a hover round is going to somebody on a scooter is going to be in the room.
Sure.
And yeah, that'll happen. And then, but it's not like you wrote the material specifically to make fun
no,
of
No, but
I remember a guy wanted to fist fight Derek Richards one night. I think we talked about this when he was here.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
About some joke about the somebody with cerebral palsy or something. Yeah. And he's like, my brother has it. And I'm like, well, he didn't write the joke intending to hurt your feelings.
Well, but it was also from, I did
and
not.
And Cameron Esposito's like,
listen,
I did period material.
Yeah.
And I wasn't considering the consequences of insulting people who consider themselves a woman but don't have a period.
Yeah, I.
But they don't. The joke's not about the people who don't have a period.
I didn't drop the wheelchair joke out of. This is where I could sound like a dick, but it's completely honest in that I didn't drop the wheelchair joke out of deference to people in wheelchairs. I dropped the joke because that joke wouldn't do as well as it normally does when there's a guy in a wheelchair there. And and that is a thing where I'm just looking at it objectively from, I want to do well. I don't want to deflate the audience, have them not laugh at something where they might normally laugh, and then have to do two jokes to get me back to where I was earlier in the set. It was just easier to drop the
joke.
You
have to occasionally adjust your material.
You do, occasionally.
Look,
but the less of that you have to do, it makes it easier to be a comic.
If I'm doing a...
makes it easier.
If I'm doing a VFW hall in the UP or some shit or whatever up north, I know that there's jokes I can't do.
Yeah.
That I'll back off a little bit on. Or... conversely, I remember one time when we were doing an afternoon show. Sometimes they do like a 5 o'clock show before the regular show at a club, and it was like a fucking African American church fundraiser, and it was all like disapproving 50-year-old ladies that would like weren't going for my shit at all, and I had to really just adjust everything I'm doing because you have, as a comedian, you have a set and you try to make it appealing to most people, but you're not going to make it appealing to everyone.
Okay, I did.
Unless you're Jim Gaffigan and you're talking about Hot Pockets, there's no fucking way to not upset somebody.
I also, here's something that happened once, and I never dropped the bit, and I don't do the bit anymore just because I think I've kind of aged out of it, but I used to do a bit about joint signing up for the military. I thought about quitting comedy signing up for the military, Corey.
Yeah.
But quitting comedy signing up for the military. I know you're looking at me going, what are you going to do in the military? And I'll admit I'm a little winded right now. I've been telling jokes for 10 minutes up here. You know, it's the whole bit.
Right, right.
And I did this joke, you know, and it was kind of like that. And I said, you know, what am I going to do in the military? I just want to be behind in line with the general serving coffee. I don't want to be Rambo. I want to be Radar. That was the joke, okay? So I made this joke. Yeah. It was a bit, you know. A guy comes up to me. This is a casino gig in the UP. And a guy says, you know, you shouldn't be making jokes about guys in the Army. I was in Vietnam, and half of my friends are in the bottom of the Red China Sea. And I'm like, when did I insult the military in that bit? I didn't. I didn't make fun of the military. I made fun of myself saying I am not fit to be in the military. The joke is about me. This guy got all bent out of shape just because I mentioned the military as part of an entertainment program. It was idiotic.
That happens over and over, though.
It does, yes.
Guys will come up to you and go, look, I did date a midget, and I was nuts over her. I'm a little offended. Or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell jokes about lawyers. I'm like, why don't nobody tell a joke then?
Yeah. We're not you're going to offend somebody.
Like, you're going to, okay. And that's also a hack defense.
No,
there's a hacky defense that comics go, well, I can't make everybody happy, so I just keep doing my, how come I can't do my jokes about how blacks are baboons more? There will be a hicky kind of stupid response to stuff.
My thing with the military thing, and this is advice I give students, too, is that joke is about me, as I said. You can always joke about yourself. You can always joke about, which is why black guys say the N-word on stage and lesbians can talk about eating pussy or whatever they're going to do, because you can always make fun of yourself, and you're always safe. You should be safe in that nature of, I'm going to call myself fat. I'm a Polish guy. I'm going to do Polak jokes. I'm going to make fun of Italian ladies with mustaches because my grandmother's Italian. I do that. You know, I mean, you do these things because they're about me. They're about my experience. That should be, I should not be worried about, oh, my God, offending you with some joke that's actually where I am the punchline, which has always been my style.
That's what fucking aggravates me about the Cameron Esposito thing.
Right.
Is she has a uterus that bleeds every month.
Yeah.
And she's talking about her experience.
Well,
that's what comics do. But then she's going to be like, I have to adjust the non-binary gender
fluid
language.
Because
like,
people want
about?
To be, being inclusive does not mean being an individual anymore, I think, in a lot of ways. I think people feel like you have to be a part of a group, and I don't want to be part of a group. I don't want to speak for anybody. If you say, you know, Italian white guys in their 40 who do comedy and live in Ferndale, Michigan, I don't speak for them, and I don't want to.
The funny thing is that comedians, you're correct, comedians in general, real professional comedians,
yeah,
who, or even open micers that are nuts,
yeah,
who pursue this thing and do comedy all the time, yeah, that's really the only identification they want.
Yeah.
Most of the time, right? Comedians just you're right. They don't go, nobody goes into comedy because they're a good joiner.
Right.
Or they're a good, part of a click.
A lot of that, when people do that, it's considered bad comedy because you're the black guy saying you're the only chip in the cookie, or, you know what I mean? You're the fat guy on stage talking about, you know, because it's a way, it's, you're making obvious jokes about the most obvious thing about you, which is really easy to do, and audiences do react to that.
Now,
but it's not considered, it's considered hack in a sense.
Right.
To be that person.
I have jokes I don't do anymore because they're hacky.
All right, give us one.
I used to do the Sinatra bit.
Yeah. Okay,
which is so funny because a guy came up to me
at
an open mic recently, like a 20-something guy who didn't know who I was, was talking to him. And he was like, well, sometimes older guys come in this room and bomb.
Yeah.
This is like a little hip room in downtown Detroit. And it's like a little hipstery room. And he's like, well, sometimes, like, the older guys come in and they bomb, and some guy was in doing, like, Sinatra doing rap lyrics. And I'm like, I haven't done that bit in over a decade.
Yeah.
But, like...
That got over to them, or no?
No, he was like, it died, and I went, well, yeah. And I just stopped doing it because it didn't feel... One, Sinatra had been... I started doing that joke in, like, 1999.
Hildebrand still has Sinatra grabbing his crotch.
Yeah.
Because that's what all the rappers do today is they grab their crotch.
But I was doing that bit in a time when, like, I started doing that when, like, the whole Rat Pack thing was still in the...
Sure,
There was a popular...
Well, there was that movie, and there was a lot of
Swingers, and everybody was doing Zoot Suit Riot and all this shit, and that whole cocktail culture thing.
I mean, look,
was
that...
The tribute to it was still popular.
Well, look, you
But
could...
now, those kids have no fuck it. So I stopped doing that bit just because it had aged out.
Yeah, it's just people don't get the all reference anymore. Well, I mean, I stopped doing a Nana... I did a joke about, you know, I love TV. I probably told this on the show recently, I feel like, but I used to do a joke about, I love TV. I love watching documentaries. I watched that documentary about a whale. It was great. Did you see it? The Anna Nicole Show?
Yeah.
Now, look, she's dead, and that show was long forgotten, but people really like that joke.
I have a couple things that I've done that
were, you know, references.
Right.
I used to do Saddam Hussein jokes and stuff that I can't really do anymore.
I did a joke about a local weatherman blowing his eye out with the firework.
Yes, Dave Rexroth.
Thank you for naming
people
him.
Have forgotten.
But it's a little too personal.
Well, listen, I don't
that was, I felt mean. That one's a little mean, but
I don't want anyone to forget what a stupid fuck that guy was for blowing his eye out. So
well,
I will mention
his
name.
Was, I didn't feel bad about it because I went, the guy literally
he's a dumbass.
Is a science reporter.
Yeah.
And he lit off a firecracker and it blew up his eye.
Now, if you make that joke while this guy's lying in ICU, you know, clinging to life, you're a dickhead.
You know,
but when the guy recovers, he comes back on TV and he talks about it, then you go, okay.
I have a lot of arguments with people about this.
Yeah.
I don't hold to that. Good God, the body's still warm.
No, argument. But it's...
My feeling is death is not unique.
Yeah.
So it's not a unique circumstance. Sometimes the circumstances of a death are unique, but why would I say something differently about a person when they die than I would when they were alive?
The reason you would not do that joke while he's clinging to life is that you wouldn't get a reaction from the audience.
The audience, right.
And look, if you go, look, I don't care. Like I tell this to my students all the time, like, if you don't care that you're going to get a groan, then do those jokes that are groan worthy or do jokes that are going to offend people if you don't care. But your goal when you get on stage is to make the audience laugh. You can go, I don't give a shit if you like this or not. This is my comedy and you can groan at it, or you can not laugh at it, or you can boo me. But that's not a way to be successful in comedy. You also can't be successful by just going, oh, man, yeah, I got pulled over on the way to the show because I was on 696 and I thought that was the speed limit. The cop said, why did I pull you? You know, you can't do that either. Exit 69 is Big Beaver. That's going to work.
Was the blade down?
Yeah, I mean, but you can't do those things either.
Right,
so,
right.
But you also can't do things that you go, I know this is going to get a groan and I don't give a fuck because you're not going to be successful.
I used to have a bit that that it was, I'm like, I'm looking for an old-fashioned girl, you know, like kind of a girl with a low sloping forehead that will with a big wide hips and a birth canal that'll plop out children to plow my fields.
Yes.
So it was a whole. I was like, and I'm like, I want a cave bitch. Is what I. Yeah. That was the joke.
Sure.
And it was worked at the time.
Yeah.
I don't think I would do that anymore. Actually, Mark Ridley said I was too misogynistic.
Oh my goodness.
And that might have been one of the jokes that contributed to that. And I didn't work there for like 2 years.
Oh.
Till I kind of had written new stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's things you do when you're younger that you regret.
Yeah, I mean,
the point of this article is fine. I understand why Patton Oswalt feels bad about doing retarded midgets.
Right.
He's probably right that they should have dumped that. But this whole, I had to adjust the non-binary gender bullshit. Yeah, come on, stop it.
It is.
Because being, okay, if you had a joke about, God, I wish transgender people would all sew their fucking pussy shut. Whatever, you know what I mean? Like, if you had a joke that targeted that audience, that's one thing. She's saying, I had to adjust because the sensitivity of a piece that was about me and women wasn't right. That's such nonsense. That's fucking, that's madness. If you want to take out any viewpoint from your work.
Right, yeah.
Then you're nuts.
Boy, why can't these transgender women take a joke? Grow a pair.
Yeah.
Hey-o!
That's why Joel's teaching a comedy writing class.
Well.
You can get in there and learn these bits.
All right, so let's move on here with other things. I was at the gathering. I'm not going to... Boy, I tell you, the gathering was good this year, even though, you know, you're like, what would be bad about... You're like, Corey's thinking, what would be good about the gathering? It was a good turnout. The weather was decent. It rained a little bit. I think I might have mentioned this with Bill, but Clownvis Presley was the big hit in my tent on the seminar stage. It's a guy, he does Elvis. He does, you know, a comedy musical act. Elvis is a clown. He does some Elvis songs. He does some other songs, and it's very good. You should check out his clips if you haven't seen him.
You know,
I think he plays rock clubs mostly.
I was just thinking about what would my context be for what a good
well
gathering versus a bad gathering.
All right, but listen,
what? Although okay, I would
as
say,
a guy who's been to 16 of them, it was
on,
a good one
on the comedy stage.
Yeah,
I could say that you've had comics I would like to watch.
Sure. Yeah.
And this year, there were not comics I would have liked to
right,
watch.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't any comics. Clownvis was the funny, and this movie, which we'll talk about in a minute, too.
Since
but anyway,
there wasn't a comedy stage, what did you do?
Well, Clownvis was one of the comedy acts, even though he's a musician. We had this family movie, which we'll talk about, with Taylor Schilling and Kate McKinnon, as one of the comedy things. And then I think the other night, it was like
but
a...
Your role was not as stressful as normal.
We had a sideshow... I was the opening act for a guy named Dandy Punk's Flipping Monk, who dances in front of a projection, which is like, it's like an America's Got Talent act. It's actually really good. He's an English guy named... No, it's cool. That was a cool act.
Okay.
The name is odd, but yeah, that's the name of his... The like, name of the bit, like a guy created this interactive... You know, all right, let me just... Can I tell my story? Stop asking me questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going to tell you about Clownvis.
Okay.
Please. Well, it's a serious business, Corey. Stop it.
You know,
I'm going to tell you about the clown Elvis impersonator.
You know a bit I take back?
What's that?
The one about Clownvis.
I know, but Clownvis, okay. So he plays like rock clubs because he did the Logger House, and I guess Violent J and some of the psychopathic crew went to see him, and they thought he was great. So Clownvis came and, you know, they brought him to the gathering. And like, here's my take on him. As like a guitar comedian act, one of the best I've ever seen. I mean, he's hilarious.
We got to post pictures of Clownvis.
Yeah, Clownvis is great. No. I should have got a photo with Clownvis.
Put that in the link.
I was an Upchuck at the time with Clownvis. I performed as Upchuck in front of Dandy Punk. But
well,
anyway.
He's got a giant wig, like
a big pompadour,
like Johnny
wig.
Handsome, the Brad Pitt movie.
Yeah.
From the early 90s.
Yeah, it's an exaggerated Elvis hairdo and costume. But, like, he just does funny songs. Like, and his improvs are really funny. He did some of it that was specific to the gathering. Mike is the guy who does Clownvis. And he's real funny.
Now, why didn't Max Sabbath play the gathering?
Well, I don't know. That's not up to me. I feel like they... I don't know.
Doesn't that seem like an act that would be perfect?
Maybe
the
they're
gathering?
Not aware about Max Sabbath. You can turn him on to that. I'll give you the number of the guy. But he does a thing about, like, he does Jack and Diane from John Cougar, and he goes, I don't really know all the lyrics. I just know it's about sucking on a chili dog. So he does the whole song, but every line is about sucking on a chili dog. It was just funny. The guy has a really good comedic musical act. It's hilarious. It's really good.
This guy has the best pizza in a cup. He put the last pizza in a cup guy right out of business.
But he, apparently he was on America's Got Talent with, and Sharon Osbourne threw him off. It was a million years ago. But so Clovis was,
well,
was
I'll
a big
have to look
hit.
Up that clip.
Yeah, I don't know where that is, but you kind of got to see the whole show, because you could watch it for 2 seconds and go, oh boy, this isn't funny. But I'm telling you, as a, like, look, I know comics, and I know when guys just have a gimmick and when guys are actually talented. And I think this guy's really talented, so I thought Clovis was a big hit. He was really good.
What if we put up all the weird comedy clowns?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
On an ICP showcase. All the guys doing big, dumb clown
big,
bits.
Big, dumb clown bits. We've got most of them.
Yeah.
Filing J&J.
There you go.
Hey-o! I'm kidding about that. But then
no,
the other...
No, no, you're not.
All right. All right. But the thing, the other thing that we had... was the family movie. I think we had talked about this a little bit. They made this movie about a... Now that I've seen this movie, which, by the way, this movie comes out in March of 2019.
Well, I tried to look it up.
Yeah,
so you told me, you told me about this movie, and was, I said, oh, okay. And the title is Family.
Yeah, I know.
So you put in the words family movie.
Yeah.
And see what comes up.
Yeah, so
on
get
your
The
Google
Incredibles,
search. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm... fucking Benji, okay. Come back. I'm looking at...
Wait. The thing is, this movie was sold to its distributor at South by Southwest. So it's not coming out until March of 2019. But they did a premiere in New York where ICP played a show after. But the story basically is a woman played by Taylor Schilling of Orange is the New Black. She has to watch her niece, who's like 13 or 12 years old or something.
Okay.
And... one night they live in New Jersey, so New York suburb, and you know, this teenager doesn't really, she likes junk food, so she goes into a gas station one night, this kid, and she ends up the guy working at the gas station takes a liking to her, and he's a juggalo, so he tries to ask her out to, like, hey, do you want to, like, hang out and paint our faces like juggalos? And it's like, okay, so they have this date, and the aunt finds the kid. She's got to watch this kid for 3 weeks because the parents are moving, whatever. And she ends up becoming a juggalo, and it's sort of, you know, a fish out of water. Like, Taylor Schilling is an advertising executive who doesn't know how to deal with a child, Corey. She can't possibly raise this niece. And then this niece is a juggalo, and it makes it crazy. And Kate McKinnon is the neighbor who disapproves of Taylor Schilling's nonsense. You know, she's like the head of the block, what do you call it? The block, what do
you
call it?
So you're saying it's a standard action shtick with a juggalo trapping.
It's not, it's comedy. It's a comedy. It's, you know, the middle-aged woman who never had a family trying to raise a kid. It's, you know, juggalos trying to fit into society. And so Kate McKinnon, again, plays the neighbor who kind of doesn't approve of, because she's staying in that, you know, uptight neighborhood. Matt Walsh shows up as Taylor Schilling's boss. How about this, Corey?
Matt Walsh shows up in every movie that is a comedy.
How about one of Gilbert Gottfried's amazing colossal podcast all-time great guests?
Ronnie Schell.
Steven Weber shows up in this movie as well. So it's really, you know, and here's the thing about this. And then eventually, you know, the kid runs off to the gathering of the juggalos, and Taylor Schilling and the parents have to go rescue the kid, and Violent J and Shaggy are doing a show, so they're in the movie for a little bit, and they did a nice job. This is like a really, like, here's my thing about this. If this is like a Netflix movie and you're going to sit on your couch and this comes on, it's really fun. It was funny at times. I laughed. It definitely, they tried to get the juggalo stuff right, which was interesting. I mean, they were pretty honest about, you know, juggalos are kind of thick. They do some dumb shit. That's all on display.
Wait. What you're intimating
all
to
right.
is that juggalos and the juggalo lifestyle
yes.
is something that is innately humorous.
Humorous to the mainstream public, it's all
in there.
Continue
to be japery.
Well,
and
it's
jokes directed at.
But they do show the juggalos in a good light in the same sense, because
they had on Baskets, which is Zach Galifianakis' show with Louis Anderson. There was a juggalo couple that was on.
Oh, okay.
It was like,
because isn't he a clown?
He's a clown.
He's a clown. Yeah.
And they were like, "We're clowns too. We're juggalos." And it was, you know, he was trying to teach them to be rodeo clowns.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, you know, I mean, they did a good job with it. They certainly got the Juggalo stuff right. It's pretty funny at times. It's not like the funniest movie you'll ever see, but it definitely gets the job done. It's a nice indie. This is an indie comedy.
And we'll see this in 2021.
No, it's coming out. It's coming out next March. And I gave the publicist from the distributor my email address, because I told her you wanted to write it up. She said she'd get a hold of me.
Okay.
She had a real good time. I think her name was Natalie, who was out there from the film company. She brought the Blu-ray for us to play on the big screen and stuff.
Right.
So yeah, it ended up being really good, and it was fun. So it's you know, is it, you're gonna go, oh God, I don't want to watch this, but it's everyone will get this. It's not like a movie that you have to be into Juggalos to get.
Well,
it's a very well done indie comedy. I forget whoever made this, but it's some writer director.
To see how the response is.
I think a woman made this movie.
So you're saying it was okay? You liked it?
Yeah, I liked it.
I'm wondering what the response from the Juggalo media will be.
Well, Faygo Lovers was there and we're watching it
inside
sure.
the hardcore Juggalo press.
Scotty D,
FaygoLovers.net
ran Mar Projectors. So
sub musical subcultures or whatever are always a target for movies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In the '80s, there were always like they'd always go to some bar and there'd be a bunch of punks in there.
Yes,
and either the characters would be scared, or it would be like, wow, we're doing something wild, and mom and dad are getting out loose and cutting loose with the punk rock bar. And,
yeah.
It would, and you would, never once did you look at this and go, this is accurate.
This is authentic. Yeah.
This feels like a real, like they walked
they
into
got
a,
the gathering right.
Like they went
no,
to a
they
black
did it
flag
right.
show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you're saying that this is a fair and accurate accounting.
Well, I mean, look, you can get stand up comedy wrong. We've seen that in
all
stuff like Punchline.
Time.
Professional wrestling. How wrong is that in almost anything you would ever see mainstream that would handle professional wrestling? Because, like, you know, GLOW is trying to be authentic and still doesn't, but. You watch The Wrestler. The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, and they nailed it. And that's why that is considered really good.
To a certain degree, the real GLOW outfit itself was kind of outside of business of wrestling anyway. Yeah. So they weren't really even like, you know what I mean? Like, those girls hadn't come from other wrestling promotions.
Right.
Were
they have quote unquote real wrestling in GLOW? Like when they go to the indie show, they actually went to where PWG runs their shows in LA and stuff. So they tried to get that right. And you know, as somebody who knows wrestling, they got that right. And as somebody who knows The Gathering, they really did a good job of, you know, there were actual Juggalos that were extras. And of course, those Juggalos all got like crew shirts when they taped this in Atlanta. And a lot of them were at our screening in the seminar tent. So they had a little reunion there.
All
it was cool. So again, this doesn't come out till March. Hopefully you'll get a chance to see it, Corey, and you can tell us about it then.
Okay.
But it's a real early screening of here's a mainstream movie with Insane Clown Posse that was actually really funny. So there you go.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on.
The struggle for acceptance continues.
Well, it was just somebody made a movie about it and did a good job. I will check it out. It's fine. But you could sit there with your wife and have a nice time watching this. And not that it's like, you know, I mean, does it feel a little long at the time? Sure. Maybe it'll even get trimmed. It's not out for another 8 months or something. But, yeah, it's good.
You know, it's weird. I went to a screening the other night, and it wasn't finished.
Yeah.
And it was 97% finished.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there were a couple times when title cards came up.
Yeah.
Unfinished VFX.
Oh, really? Okay.
Shot.
Yeah.
And that at the end, it just said the credits weren't done.
Yeah.
So it just said end crawl.
That's cool.
Which... once in a while I will see that, but very rarely.
Well, you know, I went to a test screening about my Life with Marilyn. Now, this is interesting.
The Michelle Williams.
But what came up was interesting was that I guess Harvey was trying to bury this. Like, it's come out in the litigation about the Weinstein Company, and that, like, they went, because I was reading this litigation, they go, we ran test screenings of this movie so that the Weinstein Company would increase their marketing dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to get an invite to one at the Birmingham 8.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's interesting, because I've been to two of those. What was the movie about the Day of the Dead that wasn't Coco? Book of Life?
Yeah.
Was it Book of Life?
Yeah.
I saw Book of Life at a where somebody came up before and said, hey, some of the stuff may not be done, and then we watched it and it looked done.
I mean, but I never go to test screenings because as a professional, they wouldn't. But there have once in a while been times when they would show us stuff way early to try to gauge our response to it.
Well, in California.
Now, this is a movie that's coming out in a month.
Yeah.
So, but it was weird. It's very weird to see.
You just saw an unfinished thing, not a testing phase kind of
thing. It was 97. Like I said, they were just like, we have a couple little bit of editing to finish.
But see, like on My Life with Marilyn, I had to fill out a little survey card.
Right.
You know, what didn't you like in the movie? And there was a little box for that.
I've been to like two of those.
Yeah.
Ever. But that's because I'm also.
There's like a focus group kind of screen.
Right.
Yeah.
As a professional, I would be ruled out of those. But I went to some TV, one of those.
Okay.
Where they showed pilots.
Yeah.
I kind of love that.
Yeah.
I love, like, getting a first look at the thing and the pilots and the whole.
Well, I heard there's one where you go to it, like, and they're going to show you, like, hey, come watch these pilots. Mm-hmm. And then they try to sell you, like, a timeshare at the end of it. Like, it's a scam. Like, they send you something in the mail that says, hey, you can come watch these TV pilots. And they just have this reel of old pilots from the 80s that they show you. And then they try to sell you, like, a timeshare at the end or some shit.
Well,
like that.
Hey. Whatever,
it's
whatever,
old, it's an old
whatever
gimmick.
It takes to make a buck.
All right, let's talk about more movie stuff. Mission Impossible Fallout, big movie of the weekend. I saw it. Tom Cruise jumping off shit, hanging off shit.
Yeah.
Why don't they just call this movie Tom Cruise Hangs Off Shit? Be a much more accurate description of the movie.
Are the missions possible now? I mean, have we, after six of them, have we definitively proved that these missions are, in fact, quite doable?
It's not a bad point.
These missions are no longer impossible. They've been proven to be within the abilities of the IMF.
When he opens up the briefcase and he gets the briefing, your mission, should you choose to accept it, and he'll go, you know what, I'm good. And just closes the briefcase, and we all go home.
5 minute.
Yeah, exactly.
5 second
that
movie.
Would be maybe a better movie. This thing, what is the Rotten, look it up for me, because you're sitting in, what is the Rotten Tomatoes on this, or the Metacritic, because it's off the charts high. It's like 98%
these
on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's really been well
it's
received.
It's unbelievably high. It's like, you know, 87 on Metacritic, fucking 93% fresh, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you,
Detroiters
Corey,
also has 100%, so let's not.
Put all my friends in that shit and make it about where I live. I'm not watching that fucking goddamn awful, unfunny fuck.
But
what do we got on Mission Impossible?
Well, the Spy Who Dumped Me is at a 43%.
I'm sure I'll be watching that.
All right. Sometimes Rotten Tomatoes can bite me because Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, is a 79%.
Yeah, all right.
And I would probably rather have Cameron Esposito hammer nails up my ball sack than watch Mamma Mia. All right, Mission Impossible is 97%.
Yeah, and here's my take on it. It's all right. If you've seen the other Mission Impossibles, that's exactly what you're getting. I mean, the hook of this is that the stunts are more real than regular movies. It's not Jackie Chan level shit where Jackie Chan's doing every fucking thing, but you know, Tom Cruise does hang from a helicopter. He hangs off a cliff, and you can tell it's really Tom Cruise doing it. You know, he rides motorcycles and does all this stuff.
Adam Graham, my friend from the Detroit News, says, "Bless this franchise. We're truly not worthy."
No, it's. I mean, it's
Adam
all right.
also thought Spring Breakers was a monument of modern cinema.
I mean, look, it's. I'm not saying it's bad. Like, my feeling is this thing's like a B plus, a B,
all
B
right,
plus.
Now, this is listed as a positive, but Matthew Licona of the San Diego Reader says, the McDonald's hamburger of action movies. Well, maybe that's not entirely fair. It's the Wendy's.
It's a little bit better than the McDonald's.
Slightly better
it's
than
slightly
McDonald's.
Better. But, you know, but they do these things. Okay, and then there is stuff where you're watching it and you're like, oh, man, I can't believe they just did this in the plot. Holy shit, holy shit. And then Tom Cruise wakes up from a dream. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, you kind of swerved us. You did something crazy plot-wise. But, you know, he's got his team of guys. He's got Simon Pegg and Ving Rhames. Alec Baldwin, I think, joined on the last one. So Alec Baldwin's in this one as well. There's a lot of stuff about his wife. I guess in the previous Mission Impossible, Michelle Monaghan, who plays Tom Cruise's wife, and him decided to break up because it was too difficult as he was saving the world to stay together. And there's
and
a
they were like,
subplot of that.
We need to get a younger broad for Tom Cruise.
Well, there's a spy lady that Tom is romancing, but then it gets complicated.
That in the fucking Mummy. the girl was like 20 years younger than
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
He was just like,
well,
Tom, baby.
It's that Christopher McQuarrie guy who I think wrote The Mummy, and he's kind of does, he did Jack Reacher with Tom, so he's kind of like Tom's
actually, a
guy.
A woman who's 20 years younger than Tom Cruise is like 35
yeah,
now.
Tom Cruise so is 60, isn't he? He's got to be that old now, so he's close to it. So, you know, I mean, I didn't, look, you want a big, dumb action movie, this is going to work. It doesn't have dinosaurs, it doesn't have spaceships, it doesn't have superheroes. And I think to some people that comes off as really refreshing. To me, I didn't feel like this did anything the other ones didn't do. And the other Mission Impossibles that I've seen, which is probably only two of the other ones, I thought were good. I think this one's good too. But, you know, it's not reinventing the wheel.
It just isn't.
It's okay. My girlfriend says she closed her eyes for 10 minutes in the middle of this.
Okay. I love Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Now, the Jackie Chan movies in themselves are not, you know, I understand they're not great movies.
Right.
From a script and
right.
dialogue and dramatic action perspective, some are better than others.
Sure, yeah.
Some have more compelling stories than others.
Yeah.
But I'm there for the stunts.
Yeah.
I'm there for Jackie beating up 400 guys with a stepladder.
Yeah.
That's what I'm there to
that,
watch.
That's great.
Right?
Innovative stuff.
And it's always incredible,
it
the
is.
Shit that he did.
Yeah.
He's getting old now, but,
yeah.
you know...
Okay, but I'll give you more.
But those are great.
Recent.
So I could appreciate a
right.
stunt. This is a.
Okay, no.
This isn't a movie. It's a stunt spectacular.
I'm going to tell you what this isn't and what deserved 97% on Rotten Tomatoes and probably didn't even get it. The Raid Redemption.
Great.
Unbelievable
right.
action.
That's
unbelievable
another,
out of this
well,
world.
Much like Jackie Chan.
Crazy fucking shit.
That's just a ass beating spectacular.
Crazy right. shit. Even Raid 2 was pretty good in that way. Yeah. You know, even John Wick is crazy in a way that's really good.
Well,
this is not as good as any of those.
Action,
so don't think that it's John Wick or
action
any
fans
of those.
Appreciate that.
Yeah,
Old Boy, the original, not the Josh Brolin
yeah.
remake, but the Korean mm-hmm. version,
yeah.
was a good story that had crazy like that hallway fight scene is as
okay.
good as anything you've
yeah.
ever seen.
Yeah.
So you can have both, but
yeah.
I just feel like these are not
to me. Mission Impossible didn't reach that level of. John, I didn't see John Wick 2, but the first John Wick's really good.
Well,
The Raid is fantastic.
Some dummy at Variety was like, why don't the Mission Impossible movies get Oscar consideration?
No.
And I said,
did you watch this fucking movie?
And my response to it was, is there a gas leak at the Variety office? Because, like, there's a difference between this is, okay. You know what they call, there's loss leaders?
Yeah.
Which are like cheap items that get you into the store
yeah,
to buy
yeah.
other stuff.
Sure.
That's what Mission Impossible kind of is.
Yeah.
It is there to draw in butts in the seats.
Right.
Which then makes a profit for the studios and the theater chains
wow.
to keep operating so that other movies can come along.
But
there's two worlds. It's like the MMA, there's MMA and pro wrestling. One's real popular and the other's popular, but they don't connect.
Well, they do sometimes.
But
I think the thing about Mission Impossible is it's automatically the name alone with Tom Cruise is going to make a certain amount of money,
mm-hmm.
whereas Tom Cruise as Joe Blow action guy or the Mummy doesn't make that. So it's like it's the right project for him at this time. International goes crazy for this. I mean, most of this movie takes place outside of the United States, of course. You know, it takes place in Paris, mm-hmm. in London, and Kathmandu, Corey. Because who wouldn't want to see Tom Cruise in Kathmandu?
Well, you know who would love to be in Kathmandu?
Who's that?
Bob Seger.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's just a regular guy. He just loves driving in his car,
yeah.
going to the drive-in, sucking on some chili dogs. Drinking a Stroh's or a Pabst out of a can. Just a regular blue-collar, regular American dude. And he wants to get out of here and go to Kathmandu.
If he ever gets out of here.
Right. That's where he's going to go to. This is a comedy bit.
Yeah.
This sounds like a Jerry Seinfeld bit. But, you know. What? I don't think Bob Seger would want to go to Kathmandu.
Isn't yeah. that's just a Chuck Berry song, by the way.
Isn't it?
Yeah. If you listen to it, it really...
Oh,
I think
right.
it's
oh,
rollover...
the structure of it?
Yeah, I think it's just rollover Beethoven that... Bob wrote some new lyrics for him, but anyway. All right.
Kathmandu.
Yeah.
Always baffled me, that song.
Yeah. All right, let's get into now. You saw a bunch of stuff, and then I saw the worst movie of the year.
All right.
We'll talk about that, but you go ahead. And
well,
what's next?
Here's a movie that's at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes and deserving of it.
Okay.
Made by a comedian.
Oh, my goodness.
Directed by a comedian.
Yes.
Written and directed by a comedian. Bo Burnham.
Bo Burnham.
Who is a guy who I have consistently, with every fiber of my being, wanted to hate and have been unable to do it.
Yeah.
Because Bo Burnham started out on YouTube doing songs.
Okay.
And broke out when he was like 17 or 18.
Okay.
Doing songs.
Yeah.
And now he's like 27.
Okay.
And I've seen Bo live.
All right.
And it is I realize, once again, talking about audiences and directing your audience for comedy, I'm not in the audience for Bo Burnham's comedy.
Okay.
But I see that he's got huge talent.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, very millennial bits. He does a lot of singing and music in his act.
Yeah.
But I saw him live and I went, oh shit, this guy is really good.
Yeah.
It's not comedy for me, but it's good.
Okay. He's talented.
Yes. He's got huge talent. So now he goes and makes a movie.
Yeah.
And the fucker makes a great movie.
All right.
And he's super. I talked to him. I interviewed him. He's a super nice guy. I'll put a link to my interview with Bo Burnham.
All right.
You can read there.
Send it to me.
Super nice guy. The movie's about an eighth grade girl named Kayla.
What's the name of the movie?
Eighth Grade.
Okay.
And this is like
point to people.
This
might
is
want.
Like the end of eighth grade. It's like the last month of school.
Yeah.
And it's basically just like her. She's miserable and has had a horrible time in eighth grade, but she makes these self help videos on YouTube.
Okay.
She's got a YouTube channel that's all about like, hey guys. Let's talk about positive thinking. And she does this whole bit where she's presenting this thing.
And that makes you popular?
No.
Oh.
Because her videos don't get a lot of clicks.
Oh.
But she's like this putting
on. I was going to start a YouTube channel.
She's putting on.
Tell eighth grade girls how to be popular.
Exactly.
I guess. I don't know. No one would want that from me.
But she's got all this like life advice that she's putting on YouTube. And she has this totally different persona on her YouTube videos. And then at school, she's voted the quietest girl in school.
Yeah.
And everything is like. Torture, like every little social interaction, and she's just terrified of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
She gets invited to the popular girl swim party because her mom thinks her dad's cute.
Yeah,
she's got a single dad who tries hard and is dopey. But like, anyway, all of it feels completely authentic and real, really well acted. The direction's great. Like his use of music. He really gets eighth grade boys right, how stupid they are.
All right.
Or you know, and just like the obliviousness of like, and it talks about all the weird pressures that these kids that are like 13 now and are on Snapchat and WhatsApp and all this shit and are online constantly and are living in their phones are having adjusting to the real world. So, it felt universal. It felt like, you could relate to your own eighth grade experience, your own high school experience.
Maybe I should talk about my internet experience buying Abbott and Costello merchandise on eBay. Would anyone watch that movie? Anyone looking for
As
that?
I'm looking for out-of-print Toho science fiction films from the 50s and 60s, I'm looking
what
for...
pro wrestling t-shirts can I get for cheap?
I'm looking for, hey, has anybody got a deal on a DVD of Tokyo Shock's copy of Frankenstein Conquers the World? I know. Our internet, but...
I have a podcast where I talk about the gathering of the Juggalos, and it's not lighting up.
I would say that this is a movie that, well, it's, yes, we have done nothing to attract...
Even Juggalos don't listen, that's how bad. That's how bad. That's so bad.
hey, these two guys invented podcasting and no one cares.
Yeah, we invented the thing. We literally invented this.
We did. We're not making that up.
We're not making that up.
We invented like
kind
half the shit that
it.
People do.
I know.
The bonus
no
episodes and the whole the fan club.
Live events,
all
live
shit.
Podcasts.
Jimmy fucking Pardo came and said, what's a podcast?
Jimmy Pardo.
I'm not shitting on Jimmy Pardo. I'm just saying.
He was inspired by us.
He didn't know what a podcast
that's
was.
That's absolutely true. But anyway.
No, he didn't take any.
Eighth grade. Back to eighth
Jimmy
grade.
Jimmy didn't take any
back
content from
grade.
Us.
Back to eighth grade.
Eighth grade's a great movie. I will say there sometimes is a movie. Okay. I said I wouldn't want to watch Mamma Mia. And I know this about myself. And I can look into my soul. The job of a film critic is to be agnostic in terms of genre. You're supposed to approach everything and go, I'll give this a fair shot.
Yeah.
Now I know if it's like a movie about, it's like a movie about how some guy had a Christian rock single that broke out big, I'm going to hate it.
Yes.
Like exactly. There's certain things I just know I'm not going to like because I know they're going to be treacly or whatever. There's a movie about dogs.
We can only imagine, Corey.
There's a movie called Dog.
I Can Only, isn't it? I can only imagine. Well, we called one of the podcasts We Can Only Imagine when we talked about that.
Terrible. Did you see the trailer for Dog Days?
I think I did.
This is like a romantic comedy where people bond over their dogs with Adam Pally. Anyway, I like Adam
Didn't
Pally.
Didn't Janine Garofalo do that already?
Must love dogs. She had a radio show.
Must love dogs. You have to date Janine Garofalo.
Thank you
very much.
Right. Now, I know we've talked about...
By the way, we fucked Janine Garofalo now.
Are you kidding me?
In 1995.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, I know. We could get her now.
I would beat her pussy like Rodney King.
Hey,
she's white.
Hell.
Look, a white woman hasn't been beaten this hard with a dick. Anyway,
all right, come on.
Nothing to
eighth
do.
Grade. You're almost done.
Seriously, Janine.
You're almost done with.
I
the
love
review.
Janine Garofalo.
We almost finished a review of a movie.
Eighth grade. I'm saying,
but it's not made for eighth graders. It's made for adults because adults can relate to what.
I think eighth graders will watch it and like it.
Oh, okay.
But it's not made as a kids movie.
It's a coming of age movie,
you know what I mean?
For adults.
Right. It's not like a Nickelodeon movie.
Yeah.
It's not presented in the tropes of a kid movie. But a kid would obviously like it if they saw it.
Okay.
And I think an adult can appreciate it because they will then go, you'll be identifying with the dorky dad who's trying to please her.
Okay.
Or you can remember your own.
But this is art house cinema in a sense.
It definitely is, yeah. But it's great. Okay. It's really well done.
I'm going to try to see that.
Surprisingly well done. Take your girlfriend to it. I think it's a winner.
Well, all I know is a spy just got dumped, and I'm probably going to have to figure out what happened with that one before I see
that
eighth
got
grade.
A 43%.
I know, and I'm believe me, the movie I'm going to talk about in a second. Can I move into that one now?
There's two other movies.
Well, because this is a high school movie, and that's why I want to talk about it.
Oh.
Coming off eighth grade. In fact, can you just pull up here's what I want you to do. I'm going to start describing it. Pull up the trailer for this, and then I'm going to have you describe it to the audience, because I can't possibly do it justice about how bad this is. Look for Everyday Trailer on YouTube. Okay. I don't even know if I'll have the audio for this, but you can describe it. It'll be good enough. This is a movie about a high school girl who has a secret admirer. But there is a Twilight Zone-like twist in that every day it's a different person who is changing bodies who she has to go out on different dates with.
Okay.
So it's almost like a Groundhog Day meets... What was Heaven Can Wait a little bit, but meets Groundhog Day.
So she's in a different body every day.
Are you watching this? Can you
I'm watching it? Yes.
Okay, describe this girl's like.
And I'll tell you what the difference is between this and eighth grade.
Yeah.
Like you said, I said that eighth grade is the 400 blows for the iCarly generation.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like. An art movie. You're right.
Well, that's the Florida Project, you could say, is kind of in that same ballpark.
And you can just... sometimes it's hard when I try to talk about movies to people, because it is like... you know what I mean? When you smell a slice of pizza.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever. You walk into a pizzeria and you smell the place and you go, oh, this smells good.
Yeah.
Or you know what I mean? You just know there's a sensual experience, and you can just look at a movie and tell if you're going to like it. Based on the composition,
yes.
The lighting,
yes. That's what we're going to talk about.
The shot selection
every day here. No, this thing is YA, young adult, and my girlfriend wanted to see this, so we rented it on Google Play. Describe what's happening, Corey.
She's on the phone. There's a fat guy running. She's running on the football field. I don't know.
She's hugging
now,
and kissing.
Is it the same girl? Wait, I'm confused. Is she's going into different bodies?
No. Her secret admirer is going into different bodies.
Oh.
And she doesn't know who that really is and who she should, you know.
So they're trying to woo her.
Yes. And they communicate by texting.
It's really kind of ripping off Groundhog Day, isn't it?
Well, in the sense, no, because but it's going to be a different person. And sometimes it's a person she knows, and sometimes it's a person...
Now, obviously, I have the volume down.
Yes.
So I can't hear the music, but the music,
oh,
I'm
my
sure,
God. Well, here's the
is
thing.
Saccharine. Can you play the trailer?
I don't think I want to play it, but here's what I'll tell you. I will play something from the movie. This movie is the most unbelievable bunch of fucking... teenage bullshit you'll ever see. It's so bad. And it has like a 63% on Rotten Tomatoes. It came out in like, it made like $6 million at the box office. This movie made no money. Okay, her mom, this girl's mom, this girl is some Australian actress you never heard of. The mom is played by Maria Bello.
Uh-huh.
Which, I just keep watching this and I'm going, boy, Maria Bello's done some good nude scenes in the past. What was the A History of Violence?
Sure,
and wasn't it The Cooler?
Uh-huh.
That was good. But she has, like, so when her and her secret admirer get together, they have a secret song, Corey. They have a secret song that they both love. And if the person that she doesn't know is the secret admirer loves this song, then she knows it's who they say they are. And it's not just some random people. What do you think a teenage girl's song would be? What would be her love anthem to meet a guy or her secret admirer? What do you think that would be? If you had to guess, in 2018, what would a teenage, like a high school age girl, she's like 16, she has her driver's license. What would she...
Taylor Swift.
Good guess. Ed Sheeran, good guess.
Okay.
But I'm going to play it for you, because this is the song that when she goes to the high school party, she pulls the needle off the record that everyone's dancing to find her secret admirer by playing this song. You may be familiar with this. This is what a 16-year-old girl in 2018 wants to listen to, Corey. I don't know if you reckon. You probably recognize the beat. This was a fairly popular song at one point.
You reckon? Lovell Tears Apart.
No, it's close to that, though.
Oh, it's not?
Same era. Okay, this is The Day by The from 1983. That this girl...
Does it not sound like Love Will Tear Us Apart?
It does, yeah. It's probably a ripoff of that. It probably came a little bit later. It's same chords. Played on a harmonium or something.
Well, it's funny. 80s music sounds like the height of romance.
It kind of, yes. But I mean, like, if this was a movie from the 80s and the girl liked the song, I get it, but... This is unbelievable that this girl would like this song.
Did you hear? Okay. Maybe not.
Corey, there's no 16-year-old girl in the world that's ever heard this song.
What? Okay, maybe.
And it's not like she has an older brother who's into hip music. It's just not.
When I was in high school, my senior year, suddenly all the like jocks and popular kids got way into the Grateful Dead.
Yes.
Now, that was probably just because they like smoking weed.
Yes.
But there was no real reason why.
No, but.
At the height of the.
No, but the Grateful.
Grunge alternative era.
The Grateful Dead were a famous act. This is the fucking
the. Yeah.
The flopped when it was out.
I saw. See, when you played that, I thought it was somebody doing the cover.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Tear Us Apart.
But in the lyrics.
Yeah, I know this song.
The lyrics fit the piece.
And I'm sure this was used in 80s teen movies.
It might have been. But, you know, it's probably, you know, whoever's doing the music, what do they call that? The music supervisor, the guy who picks the songs. It's probably some guy in his 40s who goes, we're going to pick this. Or this one was cheap to get and they really wanted some Depeche Mode song and it was too expensive.
Didn't they use fucking 60s songs in like 80s movies?
They a little bit, but it's just another reason why this is a laughable piece of shit. This is the worst movie of the year.
Now,
dare you to fucking watch every day. Yeah. And you even go, like, the premise sounds good. Well, it's
now, in
boring.
In eighth grade, they're listening to contemporary music. Like, all the music cues sound like electronica.
Exactly.
And or it's like Cardi B.
But the Breakfast...
I didn't even know what she was listening to. She's
but
like
the Breakfast Club listened to Don't You Forget About Me, because that was the shit that was out then.
No, it is ridiculous sometimes.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High's. Ridgemont High, We Got the Beat by the Go-Go's.
Well.
It's a song of that era.
Raised on the Radio.
Okay.
That's my favorite. If you listen to the commentary track, Cameron Crowe is bitter about the studio forced songs on them.
That were from like the label they owned.
And they
something.
Were terrible.
Yes.
And he's like, I had a great soundtrack for this. Like laid out. And like I got some, he got some of the songs he wanted.
Yeah.
Obviously his wife is Nancy Wilson.
And she's in the movie, yeah.
Right, so Hart's in there. But
she's
like,
the hot girl in the car.
He was like,
next to Brad.
I had this amazing fucking time.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, that's a good disc, that Fast Times disc.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies. Desert Island movie for Fast Times. But every day, even, okay, here's how bad, my
but
girlfriend.
See, but Fast Times felt like a very authentic high school
experience.
It did, experience.
Yes.
I was younger than that, obviously, in the
yeah,
early 80s, but
right,
that mall
yeah,
in Fast Times
sure,
makes me insanely nostalgic.
Yeah.
And as much as we, like, hated the mall, we were like, the mall's gay.
Yeah.
Sorry, we can't say that anymore.
No.
The mall likes having sex with other men. The mall is
not binary, Corey.
No. The mall enjoys felching macho leather men. Sorry, let me be more specific in
my
terminology.
God.
The mall likes to have non-heterosexual normative sex.
No, the mall is the social space for those characters, and it's where teenagers hung out at the time.
But it reminded me of every fucking mall that I went to in the early 80s
when
I was,
God,
you know.
Every day is so bad.
You know what was fucking
my girlfriend didn't even like it. That's how bad it was.
When those go bad, by the way, one of the worst movies I remember in recent years was the remake of Endless Love.
Oh, God.
Not that Endless Love was good,
yes,
to begin with. It was brutal. When
yeah,
those go bad, when those like
yes,
teen romance movies
yes,
go bad, and I watch every genre movie.
And I know like people like The Notebook and stuff, and so you're trying to kind of nail that audience. And hey, if
way,
only half of those people see our movie, and it's like,
you know,
this thing's so awful.
There are bad movies of every kind. You can have bad indie movies.
Yeah.
You can have bad action movies.
Yeah.
You can have bad lesbian cancer dramas.
Yes.
You can have bad dog movies. Every movie can be good or bad in
yes,
any genre. I can't think of one genre. Well, slasher movies are hard to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's hard to make those
right,
above.
But yes, you can. And as somebody who likes movies, I like seeing all those movies. I like seeing.
Yeah.
I'll see a good horror movie. I'll see a good sci-fi movie.
But
I'll see a good romance. I'll see
okay,
a good comedy. I'll
saying,
see a good drama.
You can
there's
make a good,
good
horror
action movies, but
you make a good horror movie.
Yes,
but the specifically the slasher genre
right,
is harder to make a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
those are exist as what they are. But anyway,
but you know the.
So when I looked up that fucking
every day, every, yes,
YouTube suggestion goes, whatever happened to Amy Jo Johnson?
I do not know whatever.
She was the Pink
Amy
Power
jo
Ranger.
Johnson.
Here's what happened to Amy Jo Johnson.
Yes,
two things happened. She sucked at acting.
Yes,
and she turned 35.
Well, that
those are the two things that
well,
happened to Amy Jo Johnson. Why she's obscure? I love these articles that are like, what really happened to Applebee's?
Yes.
It fucking sucked. That's what happened to Applebee's.
It was never good.
The food's terrible. That's why they're like, millennials
all
are
right,
killing Applebee's. I guess good taste
before
is killing
before you
Applebee's,
come to the next show, Corey.
Yeah.
I want you over to go over to the 8 Mile Applebee's and file a full report on the next show. Are you up for that?
Fuck no.
All right, come on. Take the wife. Go
I mean,
over to go over and get some apps.
I
get
mean,
for some 2 for 20.
And we might get some
come on,
apps. We went to Applebee's. Somebody gave us a...
But that 8 Mile Applebee's.
Oh, God. God
oh
knows.
God.
I can't even imagine.
You know what's...
I can't imagine it being... Okay, the clientele will be a little
right,
different, but I can't imagine it being any worse than an Applebee's anywhere else.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I went to the Evergreen Fridays.
Okay.
So, like 11 in
so
Evergreen.
The horrible food... coupled with a complete indifference to customer service would make the 8 Mile Applebee's some... Well, this is like, okay, gauging which is the shitty Applebee's is like
no,
telling
but
me
I mean, like,
which is the shitty Gathering of the Juggalos.
No, well,
I won't
it's
know
okay,
which one's
there,
which.
No, believe me, I think there is a qualitative difference between the 8 Mile Applebee's and you know, the Novi Applebee's. I think you're going to notice a difference
okay,
there. I think the quality of employee is going to be a little different. I think the... The clientele is going to be a little different, and it just sounds like hideous. But the Evergreen Fridays is like the wildest juke joint you've ever seen on like a Tuesday night. Because I went there.
Wait, is it because there's nowhere other bars over there?
I have no idea why, but it's
well,
like...
Okay, like my in-laws live
it's
out.
It's just kind of
thing. My in-laws live out.
I went there with Mike Bonner before the radio show.
Yeah.
You never saw anything like this. Well, it was like the Cotton Club in there. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable, Corey. And again, I don't wish it on my worst enemy, but
well Southfield's kind of weird because it's
is,
like
yes.
Southfield was like a lot of Jews,
Yeah.
Until about 1991.
Yeah.
And then the Jews were like, well, we're going to bless Bloomfield. Bye now.
Yeah. So
all the houses on the market.
Yeah.
So like there's a tertiary layer of older white people that live in Southfield, but like in parts of it. Anyway, the parts that are closer to Birmingham, but parts of Southfield is like all the black people that could afford to get out of Detroit in the 80s and 90s moved there.
Yeah.
So it became this very kind of bourgeois black area. But you're saying that the it's a party at the
it's one of those things where like you're getting the Detroit experience
in the burbs
because it's just it's like you're taking
for those not familiar with Detroit geography. Southfield is one of the southern suburbs, like Ferndale.
Right. Yeah, it's right over
the border.
Right over the border of Detroit, and it's home. It's home of the middle class black in Detroit. But boy, they go to Fridays and
it's a party.
It's unbelievable. All right,
but you know,
midweek thing.
My in-laws live out in this podunk hillbilly town, out in southwest Michigan, and their Applebee's is slam fucking. It's like It's like the hot spot in town.
Yeah.
Like it's it's next to a Meijer and a Menards. It's literally wedged between the two of those.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like jamming in there.
Yeah.
And like parties and like we were in a play and we went to the cast party and that was the whole thing.
Oh my God.
And the whole town's hanging out in the Applebee's. Now there's like three other bars they can go to, but it's like, why are you here?
I also went to Bar 7 in Southfield for Mike's birthday party. You ever been to Bar 7?
No, is that like Bar Louie's?
No, it's I don't know what the 7 means, but it's on 12 Mile. I was going to say it's not even 7 Mile. But I walk into Bar 7. Now, granted, this guy at the door is just doing his job. I'm not faulting the guy for being at the door, you know, doing what he's doing.
Okay.
But I'm in there, and I'm wearing like a blazer because I'm going to radio, and I got to look good. We're on camera, and I'm doing a blazer. And, you know, Mike's birthday party, I walk in, and, you know, I might be the only white guy in here. I think the guy at the door was of some Arab descent. Who knows? Chaldean. Hey, man, can I help you with something? Yeah, I'm here. My friends are over there. Are you just picking up food or are you just going? No, the party over there. I'm with those guys.
He didn't believe.
He basically thought I was probably like some businessman staying at a local hotel who really shouldn't be in there and would have a much better time going somewhere else.
Couldn't believe.
Why don't you get out of here, white boy, before there's trouble? And I go, no, it's my friend's birthday, and I'm going to go sit with him.
Yeah. Well, we've come so far.
And it's like, it's like, come on.
We've made progress.
Reverse racism. I was a victim, Corey.
Well, Joel, that's because you didn't come in and cater your material about periods to non-binary gender identity.
Speaking of black stuff, you saw some black movies.
Speaking of black stuff, well, the new hotness, sorry, Detroit.
Yes.
But we've been eclipsed.
Yeah.
We've been outshined.
Ooh. By?
Oakland is where the new epicenter of black hipness is.
Oh, interesting.
Because, so Ryan Coogler, who directed Black Panther, which of course was a little bit of a hit, a slight, somewhat of a success.
Yeah.
Well, he also made Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Well,
and
white people, Avengers wiped out all their records, so white people won ultimately. I'm making a joke here, of course.
Well, Black Panther is in the Avengers movie, so, I mean, you know. Anyway. So Ryan Coogler had some big hits. He's from Oakland.
Okay.
Then Boots Riley puts out Sorry to Bother You, which is one of the wildest, crazy movies.
Let me ask you this. I haven't seen that. Is that movie woke?
Is it woke?
Yeah, is it woke, Corey? That's how woke. How woke is it?
I'm on my third cup of coffee, and it's woke.
It's woker
than me. No, it's very woke, but it's a satire. It's funny.
Okay. But it seems like that became part of the woke starter kit, though, over the summer a little bit.
Yeah, everybody used Get Out as a cause celeb.
Right, and Black Panther kind of hit that same
note
the same way.
No, and here's the thing, though. Sometimes the attendant, we talked about with Black Panther.
Yeah.
There's attendant nonsense that goes along in op-eds and Slate and Vox articles and, you know, Breitbart and shit. The crazy responses to the movie Black Panther itself wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
The problem was all the white people shouldn't go the first weekend.
Yeah, it became a political statement
crazy,
to buy a ticket to a movie.
All this crazy.
Which seems ridiculous.
And then the guys that are hanging out at the Applebee's with Mike Bonner on Tuesday night.
Well, that's where they went right after Black Panther.
They all went, right. They had the afterglow.
They went to Bar 7.
They dressed up in their, like, church outfits
yeah.
and went to Black Panther and dashikis and shit. I'm not making that up. Guys,
Mike Bonner is one of the guys who went.
Guys were dressed like James Earl Jones in Coming to America. They were dressed like the King of Zamunda
as they
went in their raiments to Black Panther.
Wakanda is real, Corey. Exactly. Please.
Wakanda is real. Anyway, Ryan Coogler is a very good director because Fruitvale Station was great, which also had
Michael Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. Michael B. Jordan.
The guy that played Killmonger.
All right.
So he made that. So now there's two. Boots Riley did. Sorry to Bother You.
Sorry to Bother You.
And now there's Blindspotting, which stars David Diggs, who was Thomas Jefferson in the original cast of Hamilton.
Yeah, okay. Another woke starter kit thing, Hamilton.
Yes. You will be woke as woke can be. So anyway, Blindspotting. So I think Sorry to Bother You is nuts.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's almost like a kind of a black Repo Man.
Okay.
Where it's this crazy, weird cult satire
yeah.
that you're either going to go with or you're going to be like, what the fuck am I watching? Right. It's a nutty movie. Blindspotting would seem nutty if I hadn't seen something.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry to Bother You. But it's good. I would recommend seeing Blindspotting. David Diggs is like on the last couple days of parole.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just trying to trying to not go back to jail, and all his friends in the neighborhood, including his best friend, who's a white dude, are acting foolish
and having
guns and shit. And he's got to dodge all that. Yeah. And it's really well done.
Okay.
But it also has kind of weird neo musical elements to it, where like some of the dialogue starts becoming like rhyme, like they start breaking into kind of hip hop verse in some stuff. It's a cool movie. They'll recommend that one. And I'm just saying there's a whole Wokeland.
Wokeland. Oh, is that a name?
Did
you make that up?
I just made that up.
Oh, make the t-shirts. I'll edit this out of the show. We'll make the t-shirts. Okay, where should I build my vacation home, Corey? Because I'm in on this now.
In Oakland.
And believe me, don't try to cut me out in a legal case.
Yeah,
I've got this all on tape, Corey.
All right. I'll get you a cut. we'll have Marty Butler design them over.
Don't waz me.
Yeah.
Don't waz me. Don't waz me, Corey. You can be Jobs, but I'm not. I don't need to be
Waz.
You
gotta acknowledge the Apple II team. I wish that movie, anyone had seen that.
I know.
The Steve Jobs, the Aaron Sorkin Steve Jobs movie.
Yeah, that's good.
Because the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs fucked that movie right up.
Yeah, that's
because, you know what I mean? There's always the knockoff that and that one fucking.
The documentary is wonderful, too. Steve Jobs documentary that came out right around
there. The Aaron Sorkin one was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
Except Seth Rogen's character comes in every 20 minutes and goes, you have to acknowledge the Apple II team. It's just his like, fucking bit as Wozniak. Anyway, so there's some good, some Wokeland movies that are out there. Go see those right now. Sorry to Bother You, Blindspotting, and not...
All right, here's my t-shirt.
Not set in Oakland, but...
I got the perfect t-shirt. Okay. Tell me how many I'm going to sell.
What's
you that? Tell me. Where should I vacate? Right. Where should I have build my second home, Corey? Royal Woke.
Oh.
Thank you very much. Oh. Thank you very much.
Oh,
there it is.
Oh.
It's over the fence, Corey. It's on top of the lumber yard over there in Michigan and Trumbull, Corey. The problem with Royal Woke is that Royal Oak is not woke at all.
It's not.
But the name is perfect, Corey.
No. Royal Oak's where you come.
Royal Oak.
Royal Oak is where you come to get.
Come on. Give it to me.
It's where you come and get a corporate burrito. and then you get finger banged by a Chaldean dude at a piano bar.
Wait a minute.
That's what Royal Oak is.
You're saying Hop.
Can you get that on a t-shirt?
You're saying Hopcat's not woke, or. You're saying the patio at Fifth Avenue is not progressive, Corey?
I heard they opened one of those over in Sterling Heights. It's called Wopcat. Thank you. All the Dagos are over at that one. Look, I don't know what I'm talking
about. They're replacing Blackfin with a Bar Louie, Corey. Tell me what's not woke about that.
It's going to be called Royal Broke by the time you can't afford to park there. Oh, my God. It's not, though. That's the problem with that joke.
I'm going to sell them at the Comedy Castle on Mike. Okay, what about Mike Bonner's Uptown Friday Night? The Royal Woke shirt for that.
Oh, my God.
Come on. Tell me.
Mike needs some Southfield.
I just need to know if I should get the Beamer or the Benz. That's all I need to know. I need to know nothing else.
All I know is that when I'm living in Cupertino, California, driving a Bentley for my Wokeland t-shirts.
So, wait a minute. Am I not going to make any money with my Royal Woke shirts, and you'll take the Wokeland shirts? And then you're going to be wealthy.
Because Oakland's actually a woke
bailing
community.
Me out of shit.
What?
Oh, you fucking...
All right. I'm working on a Ferndale.
Fuck you. Woke
right
Park.
Now.
Fuck you. Woke Park, you fat motherfucker. Woke Park. There it is.
You're halfway there. Except people are moving to Oak Park.
There's nobody in Oak
cheaper
Park.
Cheaper rents.
Will the Jews in Oak Park buy my Woke Park?
My parents live in Oak Park. I don't know how woke
right,
it is.
First two sales, Mr. and Mrs. Hall. First two sales.
Actually, on their street, there's like a lot of like Gretchen Whitmer street, you know, signs, and like their neighbors have a Black Lives Matter sign across the street. So I think Woke Park could be a thing.
Woke Park. There you go.
If Oak Park had like a down, like it kind of doesn't have a...
Well, they like don't have liquor licenses and weird shit like that. There's like no restaurants
again,
in Oak Park. It's
old,
very odd.
Okay, there's a lot of Hasidim.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Like the Jews who didn't vacate for West Bloomfield because they have to walk to their synagogue.
Yeah.
Are still in Oak Park.
Yeah.
And so they were like, all the old Jews were like, no, we can't have liquor.
Yeah.
So Oak Park doesn't have, they've changed that. They can now have like beer and wine at restaurants.
Oh, okay.
But
all the Manischewitz you can drink.
Well, a decade of watching all the profits get sucked up.
Well, to Ferndale and Royal Oak, yeah,
over here.
It's terrible.
The Oak Park went, hey, what about us?
It's just like, it's like a dead suburb between like Southfield and Ferndale.
It's
really bizarre.
It's really not, because people live there.
It's just a bedroom community.
It's a bedroom
community. It's not a destination for anyone for anything.
Well, because there's like not really a downtown.
It's like pizza places and a CVS and a
Chinese.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not where you go. Anyway, let's move on. Black Klansman, Spike Lee's new movie. Which is
Black Klansman, the new Spike Lee movie with. Now, get this. I didn't realize this until I saw the movie, and I'm interviewing the guy. It is the son of Denzel Washington.
Oh, okay.
Is the star of this movie.
Interesting.
John David Washington, who was a football player.
Yes.
Before getting into acting.
Okay.
So I didn't realize when I watched the movie that it was Denzel's son.
I got to tell you, know, apparently Lawrence Fishburne, who I said they de-aged for Ant-Man and the Wasp,
yes.
Apparently that's his son.
As the younger,
yeah, that's what I read in an article,
really?
And I was like, boy, because when they de-aged him, they still made him fat, like Lawrence Fishburne now instead of what we knew as young Lawrence Fishburne. I don't know. I looked that up, but anyway, keep going, Black Klansman.
Yeah, so.
I just wanted to correct this because if you heard that, and then I found out later that they didn't de-age.
Well, so
him.
So John Washington doesn't look like Denzel unless maybe they were standing next to each other.
Yes.
Like, okay, Jake Busey looks exactly like Gary Busey.
Yes, yeah.
Some of these guys look exactly like their
parents.
Right, yeah. But you wouldn't really know this was Denzel's son, maybe, unless they were standing next to each other. And he's got a big afro in the movie. Anyway, I thought Black Klansman was very entertaining. It's funny.
Okay.
It's basically based on a true story. He's the first black cop in Colorado Springs.
Okay.
And there's a local Klan outfit there.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls David Duke, who's played by That 70s Show's star himself. That fucking guy's name.
The dad?
No. Eric. Edit this out.
No, I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know That 70s Show at all. It's not Wilder.
Topher Grace,
of course.
Thing. Edit this out. Topher Grace in a career
editing that out
in a career reviving move.
Yes,
plays David Duke.
Okay,
and it's kind of a great, like, Topher Grace needed something.
Yeah, okay.
He has not been having a great streak.
Wasn't he in Social Network or something? Well, he's been in things.
Yeah, but it fell off a little.
He's
bit.
He's kind there. Of a third lead more than the lead. So he's kind of the lead in this.
Well, he's not the lead, but he's a major.
He's the antagonist.
Yeah, he's the villain.
Antagonist.
So anyway, he pretends to be this black dude. Calls David Duke and convinces him that he hates the blacks and the Jews, and he wants to have David Duke come in and you know, legitimize their Klan faction by coming and giving a speech there. Anyway, it's really well done. Okay. It is a Spike Lee movie in that at times,
but it is a parody, or it's not a parody. It's a comedy with
social justice. It's a dramedy.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of funny stuff in it, really the same guy who was in I, Tonya, who played the dummy, the Shane. He plays an incredibly stupid clan.
Yeah.
The guy,
that guy was good in I, Tonya.
Specializes in playing stupid Klansmen.
Well, I'm going to have to see this then.
And it's pretty funny. It's better than a lot of Spike's later stuff.
Okay.
Although it is Spike Lee. So you realize, of course, that he doesn't care. And so at times he will go, the movie stops for about 7 minutes so that Harry Belafonte can tell a story about lynching. You know what I mean? Like, it will be times where Spike goes,
he gets a little preachy. Yeah.
He will not. And there will be like bad performances from extras and like bit players that other directors would not. I could see the exact same movie being made by like David O. Russell.
Okay, yeah.
And it would feel different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure, yeah, yeah. In the hands of a different guy, it wouldn't have a heavy handedness that Spike has.
Spike has a balls to the wall. Yeah. I'm going to hit you over the head with the message. Mm-hmm. But it's a compelling story.
Sure.
It's an interesting story. So I recommend all these movies. All
right, good.
I'm going to Wokeland. Yeah. I'm woke.
I'm telling you.
I think Royal Broke is what we do. And we put a parking meter on it, and we're just like, they're bleeding us.
But will they sell them at Gasoline Alley, Corey, if we put them behind the bar?
I bet they would.
All right. You got it.
Well, you know,
I still might do the Woke Park shirt.
Do Woke Park, yeah. That's another thing.
We'll split our nickels.
I think we need like three more yoga studios over there to really like get at that woke.
All right, here's some TV stuff. All HBO here, I think, as we get out of here today. Yeah. You really should be watching Sharp Objects on HBO. It's a miniseries. I believe it's 8 episodes, starring Amy Adams, who produced this. It's based on a book by Gillian Flynn, who wrote, might know from Gone Girl. It is a mystery, gothic, southern thriller.
And I'm out.
Crime story? No, it's great. You should really watch this. It's probably the best thing on TV all year. Has some shades. Now, it has like its Twin Peaks vibe, even though it's not. Is it safe to call Twin Peaks supernatural on some level?
Yes.
Because this is not. But basically, Amy Adams plays a journalist who lives in St. Louis, and she is told by her editor to go write a story about a killing in a murder in a small town of Wind Gap, Missouri, which is where Amy Adams grew up. She goes back, where Amy Adams has a drinking problem, and she goes back to her small town where her wealthy mother, who owns the hog farm, is there, who she doesn't really get along with. And there's a mystery about who committed this crime. Is there a serial killer on the loose? Chris Messina plays a Kansas City detective who was brought in town to help, but the local
sheriff maybe doesn't really want to help him.
Well, that was a year where Chris Messina wasn't fucking everything, but it's been a few years. But Chris Messina's really good in this. It's directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, who made Dallas Buyers Club,
yes,
and Wild, so a couple of good movies from him. And it's really, really well done. I can't say enough about this Sharp Objects. It's great. I've heard a lot of people talking about it. It certainly captured people's imagination. Look, girls love anything with murder. We talk about that.
Girls, bitches love the murder.
But I was hooked into this, and I really like it. It's gonna run till like the end of August. It might be a thing, to be honest with you, because you know they're releasing one a week for 8 weeks or something.
Cultured females. I don't even know what that means.
I don't know what that... Please get rid of that fucking article about the...
People with vaginas
but
love murder.
Sharp Objects. I think you'd be good to jump in now. Yeah. Watch three a night until the finale or something, because it's that good. It's really, really, really well done.
I love Amy Adams.
Yes. You will like this movie. She's great in it. She'll like this show.
Talk about a dream woman. I love me some Amy Adams, right. But... boy, when I start with it's a murder movie and the thing.
No, it's great. It's probably the most critically acclaimed thing on television all year. And you're not going to watch it because you're going to just
I'll watch it
because of the genre.
I'll watch it.
But you should watch it because it's really good. It's really well done.
The other one that looks no fun on HBO.
Yeah.
is what is this with Brian Cox? What is this?
Oh, that's Succession. I was going to tell you about that too. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Succession, Corey. As I'm going to pull up their Wikipedia page just so I can get. But anyway, Sharp Objects. Watch it. I'm not even telling you everything because there's lots of twists and turns in that. But it's outstanding. Okay, this was Succession is an American drama television series. But anyway, this is a critically acclaimed show. You can give me the Rotten Tomatoes if you want, Corey, or the Metacritic on this. Created by Jesse Armstrong, who made a show called Peep Show from England.
Yes.
That a lot of people know. It was produced by Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, who've made a lot of those big Will Ferrell movies, and Eastbound and Down was one of their things. It's a critically acclaimed black comedy that I challenge anyone to sit through an episode of. It is Brian Cox plays a media and entertainment conglomerate. It's essentially a sort of it's really about Rupert Murdoch. I mean, that's
what
the
it
parody
feels like.
Of it. But it's so dark. Here's a take I'll give you on this one. Here's my best review of Succession. It feels vaguely Canadian.
Oh,
if that makes sense.
That's just damning it with.
It really is, because here's the problem with it. It almost feels British, but it's kind of doesn't have the charm of a British show. It doesn't have the wit of an American show. So it feels Canadian in the sense that it feels like you ever see Schitt's Creek?
Yes.
And people tell you how good that is. And then you watch that and you go, I haven't laughed once.
Can I tell you that Brian Cox is apparently the kiss of death? I just looked at I'm looking at it. Okay, I'm looking at his Rotten Tomatoes. Super Troopers 2, 31%.
Yeah.
Churchill, 49%. Yeah. Morgan, 37%. Forsaken, 43%. The Anomaly, 0%. Pixels, 17%.
He's
got one good. He's a great actor,
but
he's got one good review in the last like 10.
You know what? The problem with Brian Cox is he's nobody's first choice.
He's like everybody's third
They
choice.
Want Anthony Hopkins, but then they get the other guy who played Hannibal Lecter. You know, and that's exactly what you get with Brian Cox. But this thing is just, it's one of these things where, like, the characters are really unlikable, but they're so unlikable that you're supposed to like them. It's kind of trying to be like a David Brent.
You got to go back to...
But it's
you got to go back to Her, where he was just a voice.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In 2013.
I heard somebody on Facebook was talking about, oh, man, I'm watching all these episodes of Succession. It's really good. So I told my girlfriend, well, I think we'd probably just watch Sharp Objects and we're looking for something else to watch. And I go, well, HBO's got this comedy that's supposed to be good. But it's like it's hour long episodes. It's just there's 10 of these fucking things. I think the last one airs this week coming up.
Here's a take I will have on this situation.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really want to watch the Murdoch family do anything.
Right.
There's kind of like a certain level of I don't care about rich fucks.
Yeah, it's just all
right. Like
yeah.
There's a like I don't care about the super rich and what they do.
Right.
It doesn't interest me that
well,
much.
Like so this guy, he's got all these kids that are all backstabbing assholes.
Right.
Then there's like the nephew who flies in for a birthday party who's good-hearted. And so I guess the plot, look, I couldn't get through one episode of this thing cuz it just was not funny at all. I guess the point is that the uncle, Brian Cox, takes a shine to this nephew and makes him the leader of this company in place of the son, who's a dick. I think that's where this ultimately goes. It was taken way too fucking long to get for me.
I like a black.
I cannot recommend this.
I like a black.
It's too black.
I like a black comedy.
It's too black.
It's too black? So
are you talking Living Single,
wait,
black
Mike,
comedy?
Is Mike
are
Epps
you,
in it?
That's exactly. Are you talking... Are we talking CW black, Corey?
No.
UPN black?
No, I mean, I enjoy anything with...
Tyler Perry black?
Anything with Madea.
No, is that...
No. In terms of, like, one of my favorite movies of the year still is Death of Stalin.
Okay.
Which is as black a comedy as has ever been made.
I think this is too black. This did not
it
work
does,
for me
It didn't look
at
appealing
all.
To me. I
no.
Didn't...
Alan Ruck, Corey. They found Alan Ruck.
He's not that hard to find.
All right, well, they found him and put him in this.
Yeah, Alan Ruck.
What's his character? Cameron.
Cameron from
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Kieran Culkin is in this. It's just.
Are
not,
there any broads you want to jack it to?
Sarah Snook.
No.
You ever seen Sarah Snook?
No. Who's Sarah Snook?
Sarah Snook's pretty.
All right, fine.
Sarah Snook.
Problem with peak television is that there's a lot of non-off-peak television. You know, people talk
Sarah
about,
Snook.
Oh, she's cute.
Yeah, you've seen her and stuff.
But anyway, I that does not appeal to me, this movie.
No,
show.
It's not great. But I've heard people talk. But here's my take on this. And look, I'm not saying people
like Empire.
Right.
Which people love.
Yeah.
I kind of went, nah, it's like a soapy deal.
Yeah.
Some of this,
I mean, here's my thing about this. It's like, this is a comedy where, like, I'm going to like, I know how dark this is, and I know how unappealing this is going to be to some people. So I'm going to tell you that this is good, which shows that I am hip and I get this, and you're not going to like this because you're not going to laugh at it, but I get it and you don't. And I'm like, right. No, it doesn't work this way.
I believe you just described the entire career of David Lynch.
But there's David Lynch stuff I like.
I know, but like, okay, this is, I feel like Nick Cave.
No.
People always like Nick Cave. I don't.
But
it's like, that's a signifier that you're smart.
This feels, it felt like The Lobster in a way. I don't know.
Oh, that guy's got that guy, Yorgos Lathimos, has a new movie
Jesus
coming out,
Christ.
Which actually looks kind of cool.
All right.
With your girl, Emma Stone.
All right, well.
Yeah.
By the way, Zombieland 2 is coming.
Joel,
Zombieland 2.
We may. I cannot confirm
Emma Stone.
This.
Yeah.
But from the trailer, it appears that we might have Emma Stone's nude debut.
It's about goddamn time, Emma Stone.
Well, there's a scene where she gets hit. She's apparently naked, and they throw a bucket of water on her.
Oh, okay. Well,
we'll see if it's in the movie, if we see. But
I'm probably over that by now. But anyway.
No, you're not.
Succession, you can skip. Watch Sharp Objects. It's really good. I think it's one of the best things on TV all year. And we were just texting the other day. Boy, TV is really a letdown. Did you finish Westworld?
No.
And that, I read an article about how many people bailed on Westworld.
Season 2 went in the toilet.
Everyone bailed on
it. Walking Dead was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
All these shows. Better Call Saul is coming back.
Okay.
And that show always delivers. That to me is the best show on TV currently.
I think the best thing on TV is either Sharp Objects or American Crime Story, the assassination of Johnny Versace, which was great.
Boy, did I not care.
Well,
about
that
either.
Was great. It was great. You missed it. It was great. It's still out there.
Yeah, okay, time out. Season 2 of shows that don't work.
Yeah.
Legion.
Nah, I didn't see it.
Now, Legion's amazing.
Heard it was good.
It's the first season of it was amazing.
Yeah.
Second season, it just feels like they're really dragging it out to be like, look at how weird and obtuse we can be.
Yeah.
And it's unlike anything else on TV. It's really wild and visually dynamic, but it takes like an entire episode for what is about 60 seconds of plot.
Yeah, I tried to watch Trust, which was that FX series about John Paul Getty and the kidnapping of his nephew or whatever.
Didn't get into that either.
It was Danny Boyle, and the first episode was great, and I watched it, but I couldn't.
Didn't care to come.
No, I didn't not care. I just didn't have the time for it or something. I don't know. It's crazy.
Okay, this new movie is called The Favorite.
Oh, the lobster guy.
And it's a competition between Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz for the affection of Queen Victoria.
Okay. All right.
It looks kind of cool.
We'll see.
All right.
No guarantees on that one.
No guarantee.
Well, look, everything's better than every day. I think we can agree on that. So I think, aside from the song, it's the best thing about the goddamn movie. So
what are? Oh well, now we're only a few months away now. We're about halfway through the year.
Oh,
start making your worst movies.
I agree. No, every day is going to be hard to top. I mean, granted, I didn't go to the theater for it, but fuck, every day was terrible.
Well, the worst movies list gets hard for me to do now.
Yeah.
Because I don't see them.
You're not forced to go to the screenings.
I only see the good stuff.
Yeah, no.
For the most part. I mean, I'll see a stinker or two.
I mean, look, you could argue Jurassic World wasn't really good. I mean, I don't know.
Ooh, I got to see Gotti. The Travolta
movie. That one. Yeah, we never talked about
I gotta
that.
I got to see how bad
maybe
that
we
is.
Did for a minute.
Did we talk about that?
I don't know if we did.
How they tried to rig the Rotten Tomatoes score?
I think we might have.
Got a zero critic score.
All right, well, listen. Let's get out of here before our Metacritic score goes in the toilet.
This episode's a 4.3 at least.
No, this is a good one. I like this show. I'm a fan of this show. I don't know. I'll listen.
All right.
I don't know.
You know what was the worst movie of the year and I didn't even see it and I won't have to see it? The 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, I know. My girlfriend likes those.
Yeah, did you have to see that?
Since we've been dating, I watched the first two. She went to the theater with her friend to see the third one.
You're like,
but she goes, now we gotta rent it.
Oh Jesus!
No, I gotta rent that. I gotta rent that. Believe me, it was between every day because she went to Mission Impossible and was bored, and she watches I don't know what I make her watch.
Come back for the next episode when Joel updates his OKCupid profile. And you can enjoy.
That's not going to happen. But anyway, thanks for listening to Joel Radio. Again, 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday night. 9:10 a.m. Superstation.com.
Come check us out over at the TGI Fridays in Southfield.
We will be over there.
We'll be whooping it and hollering it up.
We'll be selling our Woke Park t-shirts. Over at the Walgreens on 9 in Greenfield.
Ooh, Sherlock Gnomes. I bet that was
I bet that was bad, too. So anyway, let's get out of here. Good night, everybody. We'll catch you next time here on Joel Radio.